We're holding our Chavavim and Beis by the second Mishnah, the beginning of the wide line.
Okay.
So continuing in this series of Mishnayot, where we have a contrast between one thing and another, where dinim that apply to this don't apply to that, and vice versa. So the Mishnah says, Kol Mokum Shiyeshim, the last one we had yesterday was about the different stages in the life of a girl, that we said when she's young enough for her father to be able to sell her as an Amo Hevriya, then there's no knas for an onus in the father. And when she's old enough for knas, then her father can't sell her anymore. We said in the Gemara that's only according to the Meir, according to the Chachamim, there was a period in her life when there is knas and there is mechel. Okay. So another one.
Should there be knas when she's old enough?
Because when the knas, we know that it applies when she's a naira. The Chachamim learn that it also applies when she's a kana. And a kana is the only time when her father can sell her as an Amo Hevriya. That happens. Okay, so the Mishnah says, Kol makom sheyesh miyun ein chalitza, v'chol makom sheyesh chalitza ein miyun. Here's another contrast with a girl. When there's able to be miyun, now miyun is, we've learned in Yavamis, and it comes up in many places in Chas, is you have a girl, well, it literally means refusal, but let's explain what it means. It means, like, the Torah gives a father the ability to be Makadosh his daughter, when she's a Kana or when she's a Naira. However, so if that's done, if he's Makadish her and accepts the condition on her behalf, which is a Kana or a Naira, then it's valid on a Daraisa level. But if he's dead and her brothers or her mother or whoever marry her off, then that condition only existed Abanon. So therefore, the same way as it existed Abanon, it can be undone without a get with Miyun, where she verbally says, I don't want to be married to this guy.
Even as long as she's a Kana.
Yeah. So only as long as she's capable of doing Miyun, when she's a Kana, then there can't be Chalitza, because Chalitza can only be done when she's a Naira. Up to Shtei Tiras, and when she develops Shtei Tiras usually we say 12, but in reality, it's until she develops Shtei Tiras at or after 12 years old. Shtei Tiras before 12 have no effect in Halacha, and after that, though, it could be, let's say, she could be 15 before she develops Shtei Tiras, then in that case, she's a Kana until 15. Okay. So when there's miyun, when she's young enough to do miyun for a marriage that she was entered into by her mother or her brothers or whoever, then there's no chalitza, because she has to be at least a naira for that. But for makom she has chalitza ein miyun, and vice versa, where she's old enough to do chalitza, then there's no miyun, because then she's already too old for miyun, because miyun can only take place as long as she's a kana. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Again, this isn't something that everybody agrees to. Zu divrei Rav Meir, that is only according to Rav Meir. Al chachamim omim yesh miyun b'makom chalitza. But the chachamim, as we're going to see, namely Rav Yehuda, holds that no, there is an overlap over there. There is a period when she's able to do miyun and also able to do chalitza. B'mkoyim chalitza, meaning in the same stage of her life. She's young enough that she can still do miyun, and she's already considered old enough that she's able to do chalitza.
What age is that?
That is the Tanya, as we learn in a Brisa.
Okay.
I must say, Abasnam Anis, how old, what's the maximum age a girl can be and do miyun, and she tells me Shtei Tiras, give it a mayor. So the mayor says only until she develops Shtei Tiras. So in that case, that's what our missionary is saying, that there's no overlap over there. As soon as she develops Shtei Tiras, there's no more miyun. Now if she wants to leave her husband, she needs a get. But now she's old enough that if chalitza needs to be done, if she's a yavama and chalitza needs to be done, then she's old enough for that, because chalitza cannot be done, she cannot do chalitza when she's a tana. Rabbi Hur.
If she marry a kohen
after doing miyun, yes, it's considered as though she was never married to the guy in the first place. Yeah. Okay. On the other hand,
only
a kohen got off married, so. Rabbi Yehuda, says, no, it's a slightly later stage. She can do miyun until the black hair increases over the white skin, which means, actually, so it sounds like it means, in other words, that considerably more than Shtei Tiras grow. The Gemara explains in Nida, and Rashi brings it over here, doesn't literally mean that there's a lot more hair than Shtei Tiras. It just means that those Tiras are long enough that when they lie on the skin, it looks like there's more black, the typical hair is black, than there is white of the skin. So in other words, not that we're talking, there's actually a larger number of hairs, but the hairs themselves have grown longer. The minimum for Shtei Tiras, when we usually talk about Shtei Tiras, they only have to be long enough to be able to curl, that the tip should be able to be bent down to reach the root of it. Or you have a suffix if they're slightly shorter than that, but they're long enough to be able to be cut with scissors, whatever it is. This Shiyuba Shachar Alalavan is a later stage than that. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, there can be a short period of time there after Shtei Tzairus, when they still haven't grown long enough to be Yerba Shachar al Alavan. She, according to Rabbi Yehuda, she's still able to do Miyun during that period. But on the other hand, that's what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Rabbi Meir disagrees. On the other hand, she's also old enough for Chalitza, because for Chalitza, all you need is Shtei Tzairus, according to the minimum thing, that they're long enough to be able to bend over the tip to reach the root. So therefore, during that period, while they're growing to be Shiyur, the Shachar, the Lavan, according to the Yehuda, you have both. So our Mishnah that says it's one or the other is according to the Meir. And the Halacha is like it. Usually, when you have the Meir against the Yehuda, the Halacha is not like the Meir. Here it is. Okay. Mishnah says, last Mishnah in the series, so the halacha is that there's either she's young enough to do miyun, but in that case, if she's a yavama, that it we're not talking about the same girl, by the way. I mean, the case where there's miyun is there's no chalitza involved anyway, because chalitza means that she's waiting. She's a shemeret yavam. She has to wait for the yavam to marry her to chalitza, as the case may be. What we mean is, if you have, in other words, two girls who are both at the same stage of development, one of them was married off by her father or brother, or by her brothers or mother, and therefore can do miyun, and the other one, therefore, is the same exact development, she can't yet do chalitza with her yavam. And on the other hand, once the one who needs yibum or chalitza is old enough to do chalitza, then the other one is too old to do miyun. That's what we mean. Fine. Mishnah says, kol makom sheyesh tkiya ein havdala, whenever you do tkiyas, now like this, in those times, they used to do, like we have the siren now before Shabbos to tell us it's time for lichtin. And in those days, they had somebody would actually get up on a high place and blow shofar to tell people that it's time to stop work before Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos tells us that we actually blow six tkiyas. Each one was meant to tell a different thing. The first one was to tell the workers in the field to stop working and then start coming back to the city. Another one was to tell the shopkeeper, the storekeepers to close up their stores, et cetera, et cetera. So like this, so when there's tkiya done, on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov, to tell people to stop working, ein havdalah. So in that case, there's no havdalah, meaning if on a regular Friday, obviously there's no havdalah going into Shabbos, but meaning, in other words, also when Yom Tov ends on Friday night and goes directly into Shabbos, then there is tkiya, because they do have to do tkiyas to inform people. After all, Yom Tov, you're allowed to do certain malachas, and Shabbos do not. So they do have to do tkiyas to inform the people to stop doing the Yom Tov malachas. But there's no havdalah, because you're going from a lesser kedusha to a greater kedusha. You only do havdalah when you're going from a greater kedusha to a lesser kedusha. From Shabbos to weekday, from Yom Tov to weekday, from Yom Tov to Chol HaMoed, from Shabbos to Yom Tov, then you have havdalah. But when you're going from Yom Tov, which is a lesser kedusha, to Shabbos, which is a greater kedusha, then there's no havdalah. And we know that when Yom Tov ends Friday night, there's no Havdalah. V'chol makom sheyesh Havdalah, ain't tkiya. No, Yach Nahas is when Shabbos goes into Yom Tov. That's when Yom Tov is on Matzah Shabbos. Yeah, right. V'chol makom sheyesh Havdalah, ain't tkiya. Where you make Havdalah, then there's no tkiya. In other words, if you have Shabbos and the day after it and Matzah Shabbos and Sunday is Yom Tov, they don't do tkiyas because there's no reason to. There's no malacha that they were allowed to do on Shabbos anyway that they need to inform them you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov. But on the other hand, there's Havdalah. Meaning, so the Mishnah spells out, Yom Tov Shechalias for Erev Shabbos, if Yom Tov comes out on Erev Shabbos, Token V'loim Avdilin, you blow shofar at the end of the day on Friday, on Yom Tov, to inform people to stop doing the malachas that they're allowed to do on Yom Tov, malachas Ochel Nefesh, V'loim Avdilin, but you don't make Avdalah, in that case, you just make Kiddush Friday night. So Motzei Shabbos, Avdilin V'loim Token. On the other hand, if Yom Tov begins Motzei Shabbos, then you make Avdalah, in davening and in kiddush to go from Shabbos and Yom Tov v'lo token, but you don't blow shofar. Case said Magdalen, what is the nusach of Havdalah, you say in that case, from Shabbos going into Yom Tov? You say Hamadzim and Kodesh l'Kodesh, that Hashem distinguishes between one type of Kedusha and another, between one Kedusha and another Kedusha, because after all, both Shabbos and Yom Tov are Kodesh. Rav Dosa Omer ben Kodesh Chomer l'Kodesh Akal. Rav Dosa says, you actually spell it out, you say that Hashem distinguishes between the stronger Kedusha and the lesser Kedusha, the weaker Kedusha.
Which is Yom Tov,
yeah. Okay. So the Gemara starts off, Hei Chisekeya, when Yom Tov comes out on Erev Shabbos, so we're saying in the Mishnah that you blow shofar to inform people to stop work, but the pashtus, you should have to do the tkiya a little bit differently than the other Erev Shabbos, because after all, a regular Erev Shabbos, you have no Kedusha at all. Here you have a Kedusha of Yom Tov, you're just going into a greater Kedusha. So therefore, you ought to make the Tekiah somehow different. How do you do that?
It's not the minhag.
That's true. We've lost this minute. We have in the various communities. I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, we have in various places. We have the sirens, like here in Crown Heights. But, it's a similar idea, but yeah.
But we have the sirens every Shabbos.
That's true. Well, that's the point. Like this, they have the tzitzis every Erev Shabbos. And what the missionary is telling us is that even when Erev Shabbos is Yom Tov, you also have to do the tzitzis. Because again, on a regular Erev Shabbos, you have people working in the field, and you have storekeepers who have their stores open, etc. Now on Yom Tov, it's true, you don't have anybody working in the field. The storekeepers are not doing business the way they do on a regular Friday, because you have dinim of how they can do it on Yom Tov and how they can't. But nevertheless, you have people are cooking, you have people are carrying, you have people are doing other malachas that you're allowed to on Yom Tov, so you need to inform them to stop that. So we're saying,
not in a Erev Shabbos.
They're not allowed to do those things on Shabbos, right?
So therefore,
that's the point. So we need to inform them, stop doing those malachas. It's almost Shabbos. Stop,
right.
Stop your cooking,
right.
Stop your carrying, etc. That's the point. So we need
that's
to do those things.
Greater,
yeah, that's the Shabbos is a greater kedusha because you can't do those malachas on it. But the question is, the Gemara asks, hey, Shisekeya, how are you blowing differently when Friday is Yom Tov versus when Friday is a regular weekday? Given that, after all, Yom Tov itself has Kedusha, you shouldn't do the Tekiyas exactly the same as you do every other Friday. Then it would make it sound like it was a weekday all the time, and it's not respectful. Rabbi Yehuda Tekeya Umeviya Mitzvah Tekiyah. So Rabbi Yehuda says, what you do is, like this, usually they would do Tekiyas Shua Tekiyah, and then later on Tekiyas Shua Tekiyah. Like this, you do the Tekiyah, and then, before you finish the Tekiyah, you continue into a Teruah. So let's say, I mean, we know there's a machloekis anyway where a Teruah is, which is why in Rosh Hashanah we blow Shvarim and then Teruah and then Shvarim Teruah, or whatever, the other way around, Shvarim Teruah, then Shvarim, then Teruah. Let's say, to keep things simple, let's say that a Teruah is what we call a Teruah. So it would be, he starts blowing, like without a break, like the Tekiyah flowing into the Teruah, which is different than a regular Erev Shabbos, so that'll be the difference, isn't it? But Rav Asi says what you do is you do the Tekiyah and the Teruah in one breath. You make a slight break between them, but you continue it in one breath. Unlike the regular time where you do the Tekiyah and the Teruah in separate breaths. Right. Similar to, by the way, when it comes to the Tekiyah of Rosh Hashanah, you have, when it comes to the Shvarim Teruah, we have the different poskim and therefore different menhagim, what you do with the Shvarim Teruah, whether you do them in one breath or whether you do them in two breaths, and you have actually by us, our minhag is therefore we make a distinction in that between Tekiyah and Yushav, the first set of tzitzis versus tzitzis in Ma'umah, the ones in Mosav, but yeah. Okay. And the Gemara says, asking Rav Asi, but Hutzel Kishmaite. Rav Asi made a takana in Hutzel, which is the city where he lives in Babel, according to the way he learns that you do the Tekiyah and the Teruah with a break between them, but still the Neshima Achas in one breath. When Friday is Yom Tov, as compared to a regular Friday. The Gemara says, mate, I have a contradiction to both of them. A braisa says Yom Tov Shachali is better Shabbos Toitin Velemirian. When Yom Tov comes out on Friday, you blow Tekiyah without Teruah. So what do you mean? My lav loy Mirian kval. On the face of it, it sounds like you don't do a Teruah at all. So that would contradict both Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Asi, because both Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Asi are saying you do blow a Teruah. They're just arguing whether you go straight from the Tekiyah into the Teruah or whether you do them separately. But they both agree you do a Teruah. The answer is no. Rav Yehuda Mataris Patanei, but Rav Asi Mataris Patanei. Both Rav Yehuda and Rav Asi will have their own way of explaining what the braisa means. Rav Yehuda Mataris Patanei, it means loy merian b'tnei asma. It doesn't mean you don't do a Teruah at all. What the braisa means is you don't do a Teruah separately, completely separately from the Tekiyah, like you usually would. Ela mitaris Tekiyah, rather you do it continuing from the Tekiyah. Before you quite complete the Tekiyah, you're going into a Teruah. But nevertheless, you do a Teruah. That's what it would mean. Token, v'loy merian, doesn't mean you don't do a Teruah at all. It just means you don't do the Teruah in the usual way, separate from the Teruah, from the Tekiyah. But Rav Asi, Matayrus Tatanei, and Rav Asi would explain according to his Shita. Same thing. Loy merian, b'shein ha-shimis, ela b'neshim ha-achas. It means usually the Teruah would be blown in a separate breath from the Tekiyah. Like this, instead you do them all. They both agree on that a Teruah is blown. They just, because they're disagreeing. Do you blow them without a break between, or do you make a break but still in one breath?
Well, if you can make a break, how can you do it in one breath?
Because according to Rav Asi, what you do is you do the Tekiyah, then, okay, according to Rav Asi, you do in other words, there's a slight break between them. According to, I didn't do that properly. It's all in one breath. You haven't taken a breath between, but you have a break between them. According to Rav Yehuda, you don't make a break between them. But either both of them agree that a Teruah is blown, so therefore when the braisa says
loy merian within the same breath, then one has
a break and one, right. So everybody agrees that there is a truer blown, so therefore when the Braisa says Loi Merin, both of them would say it doesn't mean no truer is blown at all, it just means that the truer is blown differently than it usually would. Then we said in the Mishnah over Matzoi Shabbos, we said if Yom Tov starts on Matzoi Shabbos, then you do have Dollar. So, and the Mishnah said that you say Hamavdol ben Kodesh l'Kodesh. So the question is, Heicha, where in the bracha of Havdalah did you say that lashon Hamavdol ben Kodesh l'Kodesh? Now let's see. In other words, think of the bracha on Havdalah that we usually say. We start out Hamavdol ben Kodesh l'Chol ben Ola Choshech ben Yisrael Am ben Yemashir Deshesh Me'amasa Baruch Atah Hashem Hamavdol ben Kodesh l'Chol. So a regular Matzei Shabbos Havdalah, we mentioned Ben Kodesh L'Chol twice. So when our Mishnah is telling us that you do Ben Kodesh L'Chodesh, which one are you replacing with Hamavdol Ben Kodesh L'Chodesh? Amar Rav Yehuda Bachasim Masa. So Rav Yehuda says the one at the end. The one at the end. We still start out Hamavdol Ben Kodesh L'Chol. And that's how we do when we do Yak Nehaz, and also when we do Ratzoi Dienu in Davening. We start off Hamavdol Ben Kodesh L'Chol, but when we finish off Baruch Atah Hashem Hamavdol Ben Kodesh L'Chodesh. Right. And so Rav Nachman said the same thing also. When you're finishing the bracha, you say Hamavdol ben Kodesh l'Kodesh, but at the beginning you say Hamavdol ben Kodesh l'Chol. No, this is the place. Rav Sheshes, Rav Sheshes, says no. Also at the beginning of the bracha, you would also start by saying Hamavdol ben Kodesh l'Kodesh ben Ola Kodesh l'Chol. However, the halacha is not like him. We know that we start off with Hamavdol ben Kodesh l'Chol and finish with Hamavdol ben Kodesh l'Kodesh. The reason is, Rashi says, because why b'chalal are we mentioning Hamavdol ben Kodesh l'Chol ben Ola l'Chodesh ben Yisrael l'Amim? Why do we have to mention those things anyway? The reason is, and we mentioned Ben Yemashli the Shesh Me'amaisa, the reason is because we're mentioning it's called Seder Havdalah to Oyma. The Gemara mentions this in Tzachim. The Gemara has a sugya about this, but the idea is the Bracha of Havdalah should mention various things where we find in the Torah that Hashem separated between one thing and another. So for example, Ben Kodesh L'Chol, or Father, you have a passage that says that Hashem, the passage says, Wahavdol Ben Kodesh or Ben Achol. We don't mention all of them. The fact is, the Gemara says there are as many as seven over there that you could mention, but we don't. We only mention four of them, actually. We mentioned Ben Kodesh L'Chol, because the Pasuk says, the Pasuk mentions, Ulahavdol Ben Kodesh L'Chol, Ben HaKodesh or Ben HaKodesh. We mention Ben Or L'Chosha, because Vayavdol Elokim Ben Or Ben HaKodesh, Ben Yisro La'amim, because Vayavdol Elokim Ben Amim Liyisli, and Ben Yemashvi, the Sheikh Zeman Maisa, is an example of dividing between Kodesh and Chol, and we mention that because we want to mention Me'ena Bracha, Me'ena Chasima, Samach L'Chasima, right before the end of the Bracha, where we want to finish off Hamavdol Ben Kodesh L'Chol, we want to mention the purpose, we want to mention something related to what the end of the Bracha is. So we mention Ben Yemashvi, the Sheikh Zeman Maisa. But therefore, in other words, the point is, so at the end, we want to say, the fact is, we're benching Hashem, who divides even between one Kodesh and another kind of Kodesh, between Shabbos and Yom Tov, between Yom Tov and Shabbos, rather, whatever. But at the beginning, when we start off, Hamavdol ben Kodesh l'Chol, we're not implying that Yom Tov is Chol. Because we're mentioning something that it mentions in the Pasuk. The Pasuk doesn't say that Hashem divides between Kodesh and Kodesh. The Pasuk mentions Hashem divides between Kodesh and Chol. So we start off the bracha with that. So we start off the bracha with a list of things where we see that Hashem divided between one thing and another.
I don't get it. There's several divisions.
First, we start off the bracha with mentioning three divisions that Hashem made that we find in Sukkim. Ben Kodesh l'Chol, ben Or l'Choshech, ben Yisro Alam. And we always mention those three, whether we're actually going from Shabbos to a weekday, or whether we're going from Shabbos to Yom Tov, because those are the ones that are mentioned in Sukkim. And in fact, again, the Gemara in Sukkim tells us there are more. And you have an opinion over there that says that you should add more than the distinction between Kohanim and Levim, and between Levim and Yisraelim, and the difference between Tomei and Tahar, whatever. We don't do that. We don't do that. We just mention the three. Then we mention a fourth one, Ben Yom HaShvi, L'Sheish Zman Maisa, because that is Me'ein Chassima, Somoch L'Chassima. Right before the end of the bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, Hamavdol Ben Kodesh L'Chol, we want to mention something of that nature. In what did Hashem divide between Kodesh and Chol? In that he divided between Yom HaShvi and L'Sheish Zman Maisa. Right. So therefore, when it comes to Shabbos, when it comes to Yom Tov beginning, Motzei Shabbos, Then we start off Hamavdabrin Kodesh Lachol because we're just mentioning Seder Havdalah Tzoraim. We're not saying something specific to this particular Moshe Shabbos. We're saying in general Hashem divided between Kodesh and Chol. Then we finish off the bracha Hamavdabrin Kodesh Lachodesh for the specific occasion that right now that Hashem divided between the Kedusha of Shabbos and the Kedusha of Yom Tov. So that's why we do it that way. So it's saying that you should do it at both ends. But the halacha is not like him because at the beginning, you're not saying something specific to this Motzei Shabbos. You're saying in general that Hashem divided between Kodesh and Kodesh.
But at the beginning, we just say the three.
Just the three generic ones. Then Ola Choshef and Yisrael. Okay. And then in the Mishnah, we said Rav Dosa Omer Ben Kodesh Chom Ola Kodesh Akal. We said Rav Dosa had said that on Motzei Shabbos going into Yom Tov, we say Hamavdil Ben Kodesh Chom Ola Kodesh Akal. And again, the Let's Hilch Sekabasei, the Halacha is not like him, because that would be a Zilzul in Yom Tov. To openly call it Kodesh Akal would be treating it disrespectfully. So just say Ben Kodesh or Kodesh. Okay, we ourselves understand it means between our greater Yosha and Lesser Yosha, but at least we don't have to spell it out.
Between Yom Tov, you never make it.
No, you don't make Abdullah between one Yom Tov and the next. Amr of Zeta, Yom Tov Shechali is the Emta Shabbos. What about if Yom Tov comes out in the middle of the week and you're making Abdullah at the end of Yom Tov? Omer, Hamavdil Ben Kodesh Lachol, Ben Ola Kodesh Lachol, Ben Yisrael La'amim, or Ben Yom HaShvi L'Sheshti Ma'amayti. You say the exact Nusach that you would on Motzei Shabbos. Ah, you could ask why you're mentioning Ben Yom HaShvi L'Sheshti Ma'amayti when it's in the middle of the week. It's not relevant to talk about. My time is Seder Havdalah Humoina, again, because you're mentioning the regular order of Havdalos that we find where the Torah mentions distinctions that Hashem made in the world. So, in other words, you're mentioning Ben Yom HaShvi, the Shreishis Yom HaMaaseh, even though it's not relevant right now because Yom Tov is in the middle of the week, because that's another example of the distinctions that Hashem made in the world between Kodesh, between Shabbos and the weekdays. And therefore, it's appropriate to say it even when Yom Tov ends in the middle of the week. Hadron Alacha Kol Shoftim. Now we get back to topics of Shchita, which was the topic of the much of the first parak, and now in our parak we're going to continue with the rest of the dinim of Shchita. So the Mishnah starts off, Hashreichet echad ba'oif u'shnayim b'behema. If somebody shechs one simen, either the windpipe or the esophagus, in a bird, u'shnayim b'behema, or he shechs the two simonim in an animal, shchitas ekshera, then the shchita is kosher. Now, the Lashon makes it sound like it's kosher b'di'evet. So someone's going to ask, what do you mean b'di'evet? What else are you supposed to do?
It sounds like it's b'di'evet.
That's because otherwise, hashoichet implies, if he shechted, then okay, shechitah shechita, but he should have done better than that. What do you mean? What else are you supposed to do? So we'll see in the Gemara.
Well,
if it meant to say l'chitah, it would say, shechita echad b'oif u'shnayim b'behema. All right, something like that. Okay. The rubo shall echad kamoyu, and the Mishnah continues, when if you shecht the majority of any simon, then it's considered the equivalent of shechting the entire simon. You have, by the way, you have poskim, you have rishonim who learn that it doesn't just mean a bare minimum, it has to actually be roiv hanira, and that's actually the halacha as brought in Shulchan Aruch, it has to be a visible roiv. In other words, you could have, it could be like 51%. It is a roiv mathematically, but the point is, in other words, you can have something which technically is a roiv, but it's barely, it's not really noticeable. If you would look at it, you wouldn't notice, you wouldn't really notice, it wouldn't look like the whole. So therefore, roiv on mirror means that you can actually see it, like two-thirds or whatever. You can visibly see.
Whatever you can see has to be the roiv of it.
It has to be that you shecht it enough that you can actually see that it's a roiv. Yeah.
No, 1 second.
It means exactly that. It means it means that when you look afterwards, you should be able to see that you cut, that you should be able, it should be obviously visible that you cut through the majority of the stick. If you were to have, in other words, if you have to take a ruler and measure, if you have to take a tape measure and measure, then that's not roiv hanira. Roiv hanira would mean you can look at it and see, yes, this is obviously cut through the majority.
So it's the roiv of what you see, that's what I'm saying.
You see it regardless. It has to be the roiv, it has to be a visible roiv. Okay, call it whatever you want. Fine. Rabbi Yehuda says that's not enough to shech the simonim. You also have to shech the veridin. Veridin are blood vessels. Now, what you have in Machlokas Rishonim, which ones does it mean? You have in the neck, there are, as in most parts of the body, you have arteries and you have veins. You have arteries that take blood from the heart to whatever part of the body, and you have veins that return the blood back. Which ones do we mean by veridin over here in Machlokas Rishonim? Which ones it means?
Probably the main one.
Well, what do you mean the main one? So that's the one. Does it mean the carotid arteries or does it mean the jugular veins? So therefore, and it would mean...
Veridin
is plural, so it would mean either the two carotid arteries or it would mean the two jugular veins. But it's not one of one and one of the other. factually and then cold and illuminated over here, he points out. Well, a bird, I think Gemara is going to tell us, actually, that Rabbi Yehuda is primarily talking about birds. That with animals, it's not such an issue that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't require it because birds very often are roasted or cooked whole. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda wants to make sure the blood is going to drain out properly. Whereas with behemoths are usually cut up before they're roasted or cooked or whatever. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is not as concerned about that. But again, what do we mean by viridin? Whether it means the jugular veins or whether it means the carotid arteries, that you have a machlokes rishonim on. Now the truth is, in Chol and Illuminated, he points out, when it comes to birds, the arteries are inside or very close to the machlokes, the neck bone. And since we said before, you're not supposed to cut through them, then for pastures, it would have to mean it would then here would have to be the neck bone. How many birds have you dissected?
Well, birds have a small neck, so
okay.
Small for you
okay.
Means what?
Exactly. Yes. Let me read what he says in here. In a bird, there are two jugular veins, each on one side of the neck, immediately behind the esophagus.
Right.
And there are two carotid arteries, those are located further back in the neck and embedded in the vertebrae, in the mafresis. So therefore, when it comes to a bird, the pastus, he has to mean the veins, because the arteries, you wouldn't be able to cut them through without cutting through the mafresis. On the other hand, because the arteries are embedded in the neck bones. This is a picture of an animal neck, a bird neck.
We're
talking about birds, so fine. So here is an example. Sorry, it's a little hard to see over here, but
section of a bird.
Here, you have over here, for example. Here's the cone and the vesh after the neck is cut.
Right.
You have the mafrekis is back here. The viridin, fine, are available over here, but the arteries are back over here. So therefore, vipashtus, when a bird, when he says viridin, that you have to cut the viridin, vipashtus, he means the jugular vein. With an animal, it's possible either one. Could be the vein, could be the arteries, because both of them are in the front of the neck.
They don't have a diagram?
No, he doesn't have a diagram of the neck of the bird. Maybe Sikha Kolin does.
They don't have carotids, the bird?
They have, but they're in the vertebrae of the neck. They're embedded in the bones of the neck. They go through the bones of the neck. So therefore, with a bird, the pashtus, there's no way to cut them without cutting through the mafrekis, and you can't do that. Okay. Anyway, let's go on with it. If I find a diagram of it later, I'll show you. We'll get back to that point. We'll get back to that point in a couple of blocks anyway. Okay. Fine. Continues the Mishnah. If the person shefted only half of one of the simonim in a bird, or the echad b'chetzi b'behema, or he shefted one and a half, he could shefted one whole simon and then half of the other one in a behema, shetat tzulah, meshedeh tzulah, because you have to have a roiv. Roiv echad b'oif, roiv shnayim b'behema, but if you shefted through most of one simon in a bird, or most of both of the simonim in a behema, shetat tzulah, then the shetah is kosher. And the Gemara is going to ask if this is repeating what we said before, because we said before, roiv shalach and tamayu. So we'll get that one. So the Gemara starts off. Hashoichet, when it starts by saying, if he shechted one in a bird or two in a behemoth, we said shechitah tekshera, so what does that mean? The eved ein lachatchil aloi, it sounds like only the eved is it kosher. Because the word hashoichet, if he shechted, yes. Certainly, yes. So the question is, what do you mean shnayim the behemoth lachatchil aloi? What do you mean? If he shechted both simonim in a behemoth, that's not even kosher lachatchila. Ad kamel the shechit belezel, how much more are you expecting him to shecht? Okay, you could argue the viridin, but first of all, even Rabbi Yehuda doesn't require the viridin. And second of all, the viridin are not really part of the shchita, per se. The viridin, Rabbi Yehuda requires you to cut them in order that the blood will drain out better. But that's not part of the shchita, per se. That's a later thing.
Well, if you don't cut the viridin, there's
also... According to Rabbi Yehuda, if you don't cut the viridin with a bird, then you have a problem, because then the bird doesn't, then the blood doesn't drain out properly. According to the Chachamim, it doesn't matter.
Is it because the, well, yes.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay, so that's the question. Why is the Mishnah using the expression hashoichet and then mentioning shechting both simonim and an animal? What else are you supposed to do? What do you mean that's only the other? The answer is ibois ema echad ba'oif. One answer you could say is the word hashoichet is referring to the case where a person shechted only one simon in an oif. Yes, you yoise, the shechita is kosher, but lahatchila you should be cutting both simonim, and therefore the Mishnah is saying if you only shechted one in an oif, fine, one simon. You shechted either the kana or the vesh, but not the other one. So then, but that's not like a chilah thing to do. Like a chilah, you should be cutting both. Rashi over here uses the expression that the Rabbanon say that you should check both just to be on the safe side in case you don't do roiv of one of them. And you have other Rishonim who also learn that it's the Rabbanon. And you have some Rishonim who learn that it's actually deraisa, that when we say lachatchila and b'diavad, as far as a bird, we mean lachatchila deraisa. You should be cutting both. And b'diavad, it's okay one. But some of the Rishonim ask on that, among others, the Ran, that in general we don't find with things deraisa. We don't accept outside of Kodshim, we don't usually find the things that are right, L'chatchila versus B'dievet. The whole concept of L'chatchila versus B'dievet outside of Kodshim usually is only Durabban.
Okay.
Only in Kodshim do we find such things that are right.
Okay. That's
the Ran points that out. Okay. But one possibility,
else?
Again, you have different Rishonim. Okay.
What did they
say? So they would say that they would say that nevertheless it could be daraisa. Okay. They would argue that just because you don't find it. And Rashi over here uses the expression atzuchor rabbanon, but earlier in the previous parak there were some expressions that Rashi used over there that seemed to imply that maybe it's daraisa. Okay. Anyway, the point is that if a person checks only one siman in a bird, that's only b'diavad because b'chila he should be cutting through both. The boisema al rubei shel echad kamoyu, or the other possibility is the Mishnah when it uses an expression that implies b'di'evid may mean this that the Mishnah had said rubei shel echad kamoyu is only a b'di'evid dikasein. L'chatchila you should be cutting through the entire sinan. B'di'evid you cut through the roiv of it, then it's good enough, but that's not the best way to do it. So there's two ways of understanding l'chatchila and b'di'evid. Most of the Rishonim understand that the two explanations are not really contradicting each other. Both of them are true. L'chatchila you should be cutting through the entire two simonim with both a bird or a behemoth. If b'di'evid you shechted through only roiv of one simon and a bird, or roiv of two and an animal, then you're yoyse to b'di'evid, but it's not the best thing to do. Okay. So now, Kamash Simon, this is a simon for the names of three Amoraim who are going to be bringing like this. Okay, so all this time we've been talking about Shechita, and we've been taking it for granted that Shechita is done by cutting the animal's neck. But where do we know that from? The Torah never says so in so many words. The Omer of Kahanim, no, we didn't. No, we talked about the front versus the back. We didn't say anything about the neck. But today we talk about using tolush versus mechober, using something that passed to the ground or not.
Right.
We never actually discussed where we know that shchita takes place in the neck. The Omer of Kahana, minayin l'shchita shehim nasaro. How do you know that shchita has to be done at the neck?
Okay,
instead of someplace else in the body. The reason is, shenema, because you have like this. The Pasuk says, v'shochas es ben habokar. The Pasuk uses the word shochas. Now you have to realize like this. There are two words in Chumash that are used, sometimes one, sometimes the other, for shechting an animal. You have the Shurish Shochat, and you have also the Shurish Zavach.
Yeah.
But the other one is Zavach. Yizbach Yaakov Zavach Bahar, for example, yeah. So therefore, so Rav Kahana is taking the view that the real word for shechting is zvicha, and therefore if we find that the Torah also uses the word shchita for it, then therefore we can darshan something from that. We can darshan something from that word shochat, because according to him, basically that's not the primary word that we'd be using for killing an animal. Therefore, we darshan mimokam sheshoch shakehu, from the place where shoch, where the animal bends, namely it bends its neck. Chatehu, that is where you should be doing chatehu. And Rashi brings two explanations of it here. Chatehu, one means, tachshirehu la'achila, means make it usable to be eaten, make it fit to be eaten. And the other expression is, chatehu means get the blood out of it, cleanse it. So chatehu either means make it usable or cleanse it. Okay. So mimai dahai chateyu lishna de dachoyehu. Where do we see that the word chateyu can be used as an expression of cleansing something? Or Rashi says if we go according to the first lashon, then the girsa and the gemara would have to be how we know it's lishna de achshurihu. That's the lashon of making something kosher, making something usable. So like this,
dachoyehu means.
Did dachoyeh means to cleanse. So how do we know that it's a lashon of cleansing? Just see, because you have a pasuk by a house that had sarah. The pasuk mentions that the kohen does the whole thing with the birds and the azers and so forth. The chitei at habayis, and he cleanses the house. Or according to the other lashon, then he makes the house usable again. The boisema mehacha, or you have from another place in Tillim in Kapitel Nun Aleph, tichat eni beezer veetzer. David HaMelech asked Hashem to forgive him his avera. He's saying, cleanse me with Ezov, and I will be pure. In other words, symbolically, like he's saying, like as if I'm Tommy Mesh or Tommy Sonas or whatever, and use Ezov as part of the process of making me tahor. So we see that the Shurish Chest Aleph can mean to cleanse something. So therefore, yes, so that would mean, so therefore, going back to the Shochat, Mimakam Sheshoch, from where the animal bends, Chatehu is where we should cleanse it of its blood. Okay.
It's exactly the same as a sin.
Yeah, well, that's true.
What
you have a lot of words. You have actually a lot of words in Tanakh that are like that, where the same shirdish is used for an action and the opposite of that same action. In English, you have such things also sometimes, like the word clean. But in Russian Kurdish, for example, you have the shirdish shin resh shin, which can mean to root something in the ground, and it can also mean to uproot something from the ground. And you have a number of others. Rashi mentions them in various places. So here, the shirdish chet can mean, the shirdish chet can mean that a person does an aveira and gets dirtied by it, and it can also mean to cleanse the person from the effects of the aveira. Okay. Fine. So the question is, how do you know? I mean, the neck is not the only part of the body that bends. The aim of it is nobody. Maybe say that it means that it's a cup of tail. Maybe that's what shit is. The answer is, The answer is yes, but the word shoch implies something that the animal, it sometimes has bent and sometimes does not have bent, implying that sometimes it's straight up. The hosh shoch va'omid, as opposed to the tail, is always bent downward. So therefore, it can't mean the tail. Okay, the emame oznoi, fine, maybe say that shchite involves cutting the ear of the animal, because the ear is something that sometimes is bent downward and sometimes is picked up. The answer is, but in a dama nefesh v'lecha. Yes, but the shchita obviously has to involve getting out the dama nefesh, because you have the dama nefesh, the blood, the blood with which the animal's life force goes out of it, is used for zrika on the mizbeach. And the pasuk mentions that you do shchita and then you receive the blood and then sprinkle that blood on the mizbeach. So obviously, now if you were to cut the ear of the animal, you wouldn't get dama nefesh out of it. The animal's not going to bleed.
So
the answer is, yeah, you're right. And the Gemara could have done that, but it had a different answer. It's right. So the Gemara gave a different answer, but you're right. That answer could work as well for this. Okay. However, the ema dekara v'ozel adama nefesh. But maybe not. Maybe in that case, you could argue, the word shach, fine, the word shachat means memachem sheshachatehu, meaning that you need some part of the animal that bends sometimes and doesn't bend other times, namely its ear. You're telling me dama nefesh. Maybe what the Torah wants is you start the cut at the ear, then the karav ozo ad dama nefesh, then you continue cutting until you reach the part where the dama nefesh is going to come out. Maybe you need to do a long cut along the side of the animal's head or something until you reach the throat. How do you know that not? The two, and besides that, another question you could also ask, if you're going to learn only from the word b'shocha, fine, you could argue, let's say, that it means from the throat. So besides the fact that you don't know whether it means you should be starting from the ear, but anyway, what about the detailed dinim of shchita? Shehiya drasa chalada agrom of ikur menolan. Where are we going to be learning the five basic things that passel shchita? Ela gemara. You have to answer that those we learn from Allah HaMosh Mitzinah. Well, then in that case, you don't need your pasuk l'shochat shchitim and asaba nami gemara. In that case, then the whole concept that you shech by cutting the animal's neck is also a matter of halacha l'moshe mitzina. You don't learn it from the word b'shochat.
Because
first of all, we wouldn't know that you shouldn't start from the ear, and second of all, because even if you understood that it meant you start from the neck, you still wouldn't know all the detailed bits. So the question is, well, kralamai also. Okay, after all, though, the fact is we do have this word b'shocha. You have to douch in something from it, given that you have an alternate word b'zara that the pasuk could use instead. So what is that pasuk teaching you? It means zelo l'shavye gistera. That you should know that when you're shechting, you should not make it a gistera. So a gistera, we learned in the previous parak, it's a word meaning a broken thing, like something cut all the way through. So in particular, the word gistera can mean something that's cut in half. So therefore, Rashi says two explanations. Number one is that it means that when you're shechting, you should not be cutting off the head completely. You should not cut through the mafreta. In other words, we do after all learn something from the shochat, that chatehu, that all you have to do is what's necessary in order to cleanse it of its blood, not to cut through the mafreta, which is not a part of that. So actually, we learned when we discussed the previous parak, we talked about that there are rishonim who learn that if you cut through the mafrekas, you actually make the animal no good. You actually pass over shchita, and one reason is because that causes that more blood gets absorbed into the evari. So there's actually two different ways of understanding what Rashi says of it here. When Rashi says shelo yachta kol mafrekas l'shnayim, does Rashi mean you don't have to? But if you did, no big deal. is Rashi just saying, in other words, you should know the process of shechita does not have to involve cutting through the machlekes. It does not require you to cut the animal into two pieces, the body and the head. However, if you did, there's no problem with it. Or the other way of understanding Rashi is, you shouldn't, and if you were to cut through the machlekes, then you have a problem because now you haven't caused that as much of the blood as possible is going to come out, because much of it is going to be absorbed into the body. So the Mechaber passes according to the first lush, and he says if you cut through the machlekes, the animal is still kosher. And then Amos says the minhag is to declare it straight on the basis of the Rishonim Hulu, and that if you cut through it, then you have a problem. Yeah.
And we follow the Ramah.
We follow the Ramah. Yeah.
So it does
passable if you cut through the machlekes. Yeah. Then, I don't know what side it is. Okay, then Rashi brings the second explanation of what we mean Shalazila Lashabi Yisra. Like this, Rashi says, we just mentioned there's five basic dinim of shita, Shehiya, Drosa, etc. Most of them, you're right, we learn from Halacha L'Mishmet Sinai. However, when the Pasuk is telling us, the Shochat, that all you have to do is Katehu, rather than making it Gistira, that teaches us the concept of Drosa. Because what is Drosa? There's two ways of doing Drosa in Shita. One is where you take the knife and press downward on the neck. But the other way, like when you're cutting vegetables or something, the other way is though that you can just whack off the whole head with one blow, like they do when they behead a person. That's also Drosa. That would make the animal a Yisra, because that would make you have the head here and you have the body here.
Putting pressure on the knife?
Both of them involve putting pressure, but one is you're doing gradual pressure, and one is like you're doing sudden pressure. Both of them, shchita involves neither of the above. So therefore, Rashi says, what it is if we say the l'shavya Yisra, it means from the word v'shacha, you can at least learn one of these five dinim of shchita, namely that you should not be whacking off the head like when you behead a person, because that would be drasa. So the other four, Shehiya, Halada, etc., sure, we have to learn from Allah and Mishnah Sinai. But at least Dirasa, according to this, we can learn from this, or we can learn from the word Vashacha. Okay. So that's all.
How do we learn it from the
Because from the word Vashacha, we said that all you have to do is Chatehu, all you have to do is cleanse the animal of its blood, not break it into two pieces. And then, and therefore, the idea is breaking it into two pieces would be doing Dirasa, and you're not supposed to do that. Okay, now all of that, so that takes care of Rav Kahana, so therefore what we're left with, according to Rav Kahana, according to Rashi's understanding of the Gemara, is that Rav Kahana thought to say we learned the whole concept that you do shchita from the neck, from the word v'shocha. In the end, we said you can't do that, because you wouldn't know. Could mean that you have to start at the heel and then go down to the neck. Ultimately, we know it from Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai. At most, what we learn from the word v'shocha is that you don't make it a gistera, that you don't have to cut through the machrekes, or that you shouldn't do drosa, as the case may be. Tosfos has a...
By doing gistera, you do automatically drosa.
No, because if you were to do back and forth and then cut through the machrekes, that's not drosa, but it's still, you have the other issue of cutting through the machrekes and causing blood to be absorbed into the... Yeah, you could saw back and forth, and you could saw back and forth, right? That's normal shit.
Yeah, but if you're in one place, it's still hanging out. It's not all together.
Right, well, right. Okay. Tosfos has a whole different understanding of this last piece of Gemara. It's based on a different girsa. The girsa we have over here is the two. Shehiya Zerasa Halada, etc. Tosfos rather has the gears of Velikai Nech, namely that this last part over here is Rav Kahana answering back to the Machshon who's asking on him. You're asking on me, says Rav, according to Tosfos, it's like this. Rav Kahana is saying, you're asking on me that if I'm saying Mimokam Sheshoch Hateyu, means that you have to start from a point in the animal that it sometimes bends and sometimes not, and you're arguing maybe it should be the ear. But I will answer you, nu, according to your own svara, even if you were to argue that fine, you would say, let's say from the word v'shachat, it would mean that you start from the ear and then work your way down to the neck. But even you would have to agree that you can't learn shahiyah and drasa and so forth from the word v'shachat. So of necessity, you're having to learn those things from Allah Lama Shemitinai. Therefore, I can stick with my position that the basic concept that v'shachat means that shachat, the shorter shachat means to cut at a point where the animal bends, is still valid. What about you arguing the ear? I would say like this. I'm not saying the neck as opposed to another part of the body. I'm Tosafos, what Kahana is saying, I'm saying, how do you know that you shech from the front of the neck rather than from the back of the neck? Fine, but how do we know that? So Rav Kahana says, because we're learning that from the word v'shochat. Nimokam sheshoch chatehu. What it is like this. The front of the neck is what bends downward. Right. The back of the neck is just the opposite. When the animal bends down its head, the back of the neck is straightened out. Right. So therefore, the pasuk is telling us that according to Tosfos, that's what Rakhana is saying ultimately. You thought I meant it just has to be some part of the body that bends, therefore you're arguing the ear. I'm answering you, no, there's no suffix in the first place that it definitely means the neck, because it has to be the place of Dama Nefesh. I'm saying within the neck itself, you could have thought to cut from the back, and I'm telling you the word Veshocha, Mimachim, Sheshochateu, implies that you have to start from the front of the neck, which is the part that the animal bends down.
Even though you can have all the blood coming out from the back,
but still you have to cut from the front, right?
How can you imply that the ear bends?
An animal, the ear bends. You're thinking of a person. A person's ears stay straight up, but an animal's ears are floppy. They can bend them downward or can stand them straight up.
The place where he's going to...
That's the point. According to the Maxim, the point is maybe you have to start at the ear and then cut your way down to the neck. And so according to Rashi, the answer is, you're right, we wouldn't know that, and the only way we know is from Allah or Moshe Mitzvah. According to Tosfos' understanding, Rav Kahana is saying, no, there's no question it has to be someplace on the neck, because it has to involve directly Dama Nefesh. The only question would be the front or the back of the neck. And therefore, Mirakam Shashach teaches us the front of the neck, the Tzava. Okay. Onward. So that's all Rav Kahana is understanding. Rav Yema says, here's a different way of Daushaning, that Shchita takes place at the neck, or again, according to Tosfos, not that it takes place at the neck after, but that it takes place in the front of the neck. Omakrub Zavachta, you have the other Shodesh that the Torah uses, core shechting, the Shodesh Zavach, and we can douch in that word also. The Zavachta, we can douch in Mimokim Shazov Chasehu, from where it flows, meaning from the point in the body where the blood will flow out, Chasehu is where you should break it, meaning cut it. Chasehu, the word Chas, means breaking. My mashma dahai chaseu lishna de mitzahu. Where do we see that the word that the shodesh ches sof means to break? The dichtiv al tira va al techas, because the pasuk says, the pasuk says, don't be afraid and don't be broken. So we see that broken spirited, broken hearted, or whatever. So we see that the shodesh ches sof means to break. So again, let's go through the possibilities. The ema mechoytmoi, maybe say, if you're saying it has to be someplace where it flows, then maybe it means that you have to do shchita from the nose of the animal, where you always have mucus and whatever flowing out of it. The positive doesn't say anything about blood after all. The answer is, zavai dechisu is very name. Yes, but it has to be, because you have the word zavata, and you're dashing zav and chas from the same word, it has to be what causes the zav, what causes the flowing, is the chas, is the breaking, the cutting. As opposed to the high zav me'elah, or as opposed to the nose, is there's always the mucus is always flowing out of it on its own. So obviously that can't be what the Torah means. Okay, the aim of milibay. Okay, so maybe it means you stab the animal in the heart. Yeah. Lots of blood will flow out there. The two, and anyway, you have the question as before, shehiya zrot the chalada agrom of the ikrim and olam. Even if you're going to argue that not, but somehow you know it means the neck. Again, you have the problem, how are you going to know the other dinim of shchita, the shehiya zrot? If you're going to say that you're learning only from the word of zavachta, fine, you could argue maybe, let's say, somehow we know it means the neck, rather than the heart. But you still wouldn't know the dinim of shehiya and so forth. El Gemara, obviously those things you learn only from Allah Shalom Hashem. Therefore, Shchitim and Aftava, Nami Gemara. So therefore, again, the whole concept that you shech from the neck also has to be part of that Allah Shalom Hashem. Ukral Maya. So again, so what are you going to douch in from the word of Zavakta? Same thing as before, Delil Shadi Gistira, that you shouldn't make it a Gistira. Same two explanations as before in Nashi. Either it means that here we're learning the concept that you shouldn't do Jirasa, you shouldn't just knock off the head completely, or that even if you're doing a regular Shchita, you don't have to, or you shouldn't, as the case may be, cut the Mafrekin. Actually cut the head off the body. Okay, so in other words, you have two Amiroim over here, Rav Kahana and Rav Yemer. One of them learns this concept, Delil Shadi Gistira, from the word Veshochat, and the other one learns it from the word Vazavasta. Okay. So far we have two ways of learning how we know that shchita takes place at the neck. Again, according to Rashi, the point is the fact that it takes place at the neck, we actually know, both of them agree, we know only from Allah HaMashim, right? All that we know from the word v'shachas, or the word v'zavakta, is a detail in that, that you don't have to, or you shouldn't cut them afrekes, according to Rashi's one lashon, or that you shouldn't do jirasa, according to the other lashon. According to Tosfos, both Rav Kahana and Rav Yema are saying, there's no question it has to be at the neck. The only question is the front or the back of the neck. So the word v'zavachta, or the word v'shachat, teaches us that it has to be the front of the neck.
And that's okay.
Because only the front of the neck is the part shashach that bends down, and that's the part where zav, that's the part where the blood will flow freely once you cut it. Okay. Fine. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught a braisa that gives a third explanation how we know that shechita takes place at the neck. But again, we learn from the word of a shochat, but he learns it differently than Rav Kahana did. Rav Kahana learned it by breaking down the word of a shochat into shoch and chatehu. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel learns it like this. Particularly, the shochat el of a shochat. Don't read the shochat with a shin, but rather the shochat with a sin. Which the word the sochat itself has a meaning. It means to squeeze out. In other words, that the blood has to be squeezed out of the animal. But also, mimokim shesoch chateihu. It also teaches us from the place where the animal speaks. Well, not really speaks, animals don't speak, but in other words, where they make noise, namely from the throat, is where chateihu. That's where you should be making it kosher, or where you should be cleansing it, according to the two Lashonis and Rashi. Okay, so the question is, again, the aim of Lashonis, maybe it means you should cut the tongue.
Oh, yes.
Because the tongue, after all, is involved in speaking and making noise as well. No, the answer is by Dama Nefesh, for like the same answer as before. You have to be getting out Dama Nefesh somehow. You're not going to get that from cutting the tongue.
Well, that's a breeze here. It will finally
die. Eventually, sure. But that's not Dama Nefesh, means one big gush of blood that the animal is the highest leaves that you're not going to have. Okay, again, the question is the aim of the Torah for Ozala Dama Nefesh. Fine, but you could still argue maybe the Torah wants you to start the shechita at the tongue and then continue cutting down to the throat. The two, and even if you're going to answer to that, okay, we know somehow that it means the neck, but still, you're not going to know the other detailed dinim. You're still not going to know those detailed dinim from the word v'shochat, the darshindez, the stochat, el gemara. Obviously, those things you learn by halachal meshin sinai. Therefore, shchitim nasav or nami gemara. So therefore, the whole concept that it's from the neck also is not learned from the word v'shochat, but rather from the same halachal meshin sinai. And again, Krolamai also, what do we ultimately learn from the word Veshachat? Again, the Lila Shabbat gifted are that you shouldn't be cutting it in two. You shouldn't be, or you don't have to cut through the Mafrekes, or you shouldn't be whacking off the hand.
Shachat will learn from the knee, basically, from the back of the knee. It bends, and you could have Dama Nefesh coming out from there.
You're not going to have Dama Nefesh come out from there. Once the Gemara said before that you're not going to have Dama Nefesh, then the Gemara knows that it has to be someplace, yes. Okay, so far we have three ways of learning it. We have Rav Kahana's from Veshochat by breaking it down to Mimokim Sheshoch Chaseihu. We have Rav Yemar's from Zavachra, Mimokim Shezov Chaseihu. And we have Dvei Rabbi Shmuel from Veshochat, Zovna, that the blood flows.
Right.
And we have Dvei Rabbi Shmuel that we're learning it from Veshochat by Darshan as if it said Veshochat. And therefore it means Mimokim Sheshoch from the place where the animal speaks, vocalizes. Chaseihu is where you should cleanse. So far those are three. The Tana Maisi Lomahacha. Then we have a Tana who brings it from the following source. Now, Dvei Rabbi Shmuel is also a Tana, by the way. What we mean is, Rashi uses the expression, the Tana of Torah Koyanim, which is like a major significant braisa. As opposed to this that we mentioned before, Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana is like a braisa that not everybody knows. Here we're going to bring it from a braisa, from Torah Koyanim, from Sifra and Vayikra, which is better known. So like this, the Tanya of Chiyoim, Minayim L'Shchita Min HaSavar, how do we know that Shchita takes place by cutting the neck? So like this, Shenemar, the Pasuk mentions, in connection with a korban, after it says you shech the korban, it says like this, V'ochu b'nei Aaron ha-koyanim et ha-nesachim, the koyanim, the sons of Aaron, should arrange the cut-up pieces of the korban, the tzachon ha-korban ola, they should arrange the cut-up pieces on the fire, et ha-nesachim, So like this, the whole pasuk goes like this. So, Ochub and Aaron are cutting with the sochim, that's a roish and a poder. They should arrange the cut pieces, the head and the poder. I'll explain in a second what the poder is. Ala eitz and asher ala eish asher lamzeach, on the wood that's on the fire on the mizbeach, and then they burn them over there. So the Gemara is trying to find a source for it. Ultimately, the Gemara says, according to each of the explanations, we know it's malach and mishum sinah, but the Gemara is trying to find the source in the pasuk for it. Okay. So now we have a fourth possible way. So like this, the Pasuk mentions that the Bnei Aaron HaKohenim should arrange the cut pieces of the korban on the fire. Now, once it says the cut pieces, She'ein Tamad Loimer at the Rosh Ves HaPoder. So just Nesachim means the cut up pieces of the korban. So obviously that includes the Rosh and the Peder. The Rosh is the head. The Targum translates Peder as a fat. The Ramban on the Pasuk says maybe it doesn't mean all the fat in general, maybe it means a certain sheet of fat, like that separates one of the stomachs from another one of the stomachs. Whatever it is, the point is, as we're going to learn soon, The idea is because when you're carrying the head of the animal to the Mizbeach, you have the cut-off part over there where it was chested is all bloody and unattractive and whatever. Therefore, you take the peder and you drape it over that so it looks a little more respectful when you're bringing it to the Mizbeach. So therefore, it mentions the rosh and the peder together.
So what is it? It's a cover?
It's a sheet of fat or something. That, yeah, you use it to cover the cut end of the head, yeah. When the passage mentions that they take the cut pieces and arrange them on the fire to burn them, now it shouldn't have had to mention separately the head and the peder, because those obviously are cut up pieces of the carbon. So why does it specifically mention the head and the fat? They are included among all the other cut pieces of the carbon. So why are they singled out? So like this. You have a couple of psukim earlier. It says that you skin the oila, you take off the skin of it, the nitach, and then the pasuk continues, you cut it up into pieces. So now, when it says a few psukim later that they take the nisachim and put the nisachim, the cut up pieces, and put them on the mizbeach, aimly elan nisachim sheyeshen and mechal hafshata. So from that, you would only know which ones you have to arrange on the mizbeach, the ones where you strip off the skin. Because the nesachim is only after the hishit at the oila. You strip the skin off the oila, then you cut it up. How do we know to include also the head, even though the skin is not stripped off of the head, because it's already been separated from the body? And the fact is, Rashi says, we learned in Zvachim, that it mentions over there, for example, it mentions the wool on the head of a sheep, or the beard, or the hair on the beard of a goat, or whatever, that those are offered together with the head on the Zeh, meaning the skin of the head is not stripped off. And the reason for that is, Shekvar Hutaz, because the head has already been removed. Now, strictly speaking, Rashi says, it doesn't mean it hasn't been completely removed. Later on, when they're cutting up the nesachim, they do completely remove it. However, the shchita, given that the shchita involves cutting the two simonim, at that point it's as if the head was removed already, because the whole chayus of the head goes through the simonim. So therefore, once the simonim are cut, then it's as if the head is already detached from the body. And therefore, and we don't take the skin off it. So that's the point, in other words. So therefore. How would we know that the head also has to be placed on the Mizbeach, given that it's not in the same category as the rest of them, because unlike the rest of the body where they take off the skin, they don't take off the skin from the head. That is why, Talmud Loimah, Roshavet, Pidrei V'Orach, that is why the pasuk continues and says, the head and the peder, and they arrange them on the Mizbeach, and therefore we see that the head also has to go on the Mizbeach.
So what is it? They take the...
So in other words, what it is they shech the animal,
right.
Then with the head still attached to the animal, they then still attached by the muscles and whatever hasn't been cut through in the shechita. At that point, they hang it up, they take off the skin from the whole body, but not from the head. Then they start cutting it open and removing the chaylev and whatever, and then eventually they cut it into pieces, and then they give the pieces to the respective kohenim to carry to the mizbeach. So the point is, therefore, now let's analyze. Midikama etaroish shekvahutaz. Since we mentioned in the Braita the head has already been removed, and again, doesn't mean removed, just means that both the monim have been cut. Mikal the shchitim in a sabra. Obviously, that means the shchitim took place at the neck. In that sense, the head is considered separated from the body. If you had shechted anywhere else by cutting anywhere else in the body, then the head wouldn't be at all separated from the body. So that itself implies that shchitim takes place at the neck. Okay, so that's a proof. The question now is like this. The Tana, now let's consider, what does the Tana say?
So the proof is
that the Braita used the expression that the head has already been removed from the body by the Shchita. And again, removed doesn't mean it's actually physically removed. It's still attached by the spine and by the muscles and whatever. But it's separated from the neck in the sense that the simonim have been cut. Therefore, we see that Shchita involves cutting the simonim.
Is it the muscles are cut? It's just the skin?
Well, again. If you look at the diagram over here, you will see that the simonim are in the front. You will see that the simonim are in an animal are in the front of the neck.
Right.
You don't get as far as the mafrekis because you don't want to cut the mafrekis. Therefore, all you cut for the shchita is this.
Right. Yes.
But that's already considered that the head is separated from the body, even though the most of the circumference is still attached, because the chayus, the part that gives the head life from the body, namely the kana and the vesh, have been cut.
So when you say the skin, it means all the posterior muscles.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
All the rest.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So, Now the question is like this. The Tana had quoted two different psukim. The Tana started by quoting the pasuk, the Hifshet at the Oil of the Nisach. Which over there, actually? The Chumash over there, that red volume line. That, yeah, that one. Bring it over here. We'll need it a second. Thank you. You have two psukim that are involved over here. You have the pasuk that the Braisa started by quoting is this pasuk. V'olchu b'nei Aaron akarinim et ha'nesachim et ha'rosh ve'et ha'chazir. It's in Parshas Vayikra. Later on, the Braisa says, later on, after the Braisa finishes, the Braisa continues, Talmud Loima et Rosh Hashanah Sidra V'Orach, that the Braisa is quoting from a later passage, Pasuk Yudbei, Nitach Oseh V'Nesacha Ves Rosh Hashanah Sidra and V'Orach, and you could arrange them on the Mizeach and burn them. So what, the question is, why is Tana meant starting with one Pasuk and then explaining why it says a different Pasuk? The Tana, Pasach Berosho Peder, or Messiah Berosho Pidre. What's going on? The Tana is beginning by quoting Pasach Ches and asking why it has to mention the Rosh and Peder separately over there. O Messiah and Berosho Pidre. Then it continues by quoting Pasach Yudbez, which mentions Es Roshe Bet Pidre. So why
is it separate?
Why is the Braisa? The Braisa should finish off. That is why it says Es Roshe Bet Peder. Why is the Braisa finishing by quoting a different Pasach? The answer is Hokikama. Right, what the Braisa means is like this. Minayim l'rabbis is a roish shekvavutaz. Again, we're asking, how do we know that the head, which has already been effectively removed from the body by the shechita, how do we know that that also, and it's also, again, the skin is not being stripped off it, how do we know that it also has to be placed and arranged on the mizbeach together with the rest of the pieces? Tamadloim, et a roish ve'et a fader. The reason is because it's the original pasuk that we quoted that mentioned et a roish ve'et a fader. So then the question is, the Braisa is implying Verosha Pidre Lomali. So then the Braisa is implying another question. In that case, why four psukim later does it again have to mention the Rosh and the Peder?
It mentioned the Rosh.
It mentioned already them in Pasuk Ches. So why does it repeat them again in Pasuk Yudbeis? Right. Now the fact is, I mean, those are two different animals for Korbanos. Pasuk Ches is talking about cattle, and Pasuk Yudbeis is talking about sheep. But still, the same rules apply to both of them. Yeah, they're both famous.
Right.
So like this, Miboyle Lachidatanya, the reason is we need that extra time that it says Roisha in Pidroi, we need it to teach us the following thing, as we learn in another Braisa. Minayim Roishu Peder Shakoidmin Lachol Anasachim. How do we know that the Roish and Peder are offered on the Mizbeach ahead of all the other limbs of the animal? So yeah, well, like this, the animal is cut up into its various limbs, and the Peder is a sheet of fat that's draped over the head.
From where?
It's taken from someplace in the stomach or whatever.
Oh.
But in other words, the point is, so again, they hang up the animal, they strip off the skin off the body, but not the head. They cut it open, they take out the various fats and whatever, and then they cut the animal into pieces. Then you have all the koyanim are standing in a line over there, and they go bring it to the mizbeach. They put it on the kevesh, and later on, they bring it from the kevesh and throw it into the fire on the mizbeach. But always the head and the peder together with it go first. How do we know that? That is why the pasuk again mentions Rosh and Pidre, and he arranges them to teach us that concept. So you have two different things. One, to teach us that the head, even though it's been effectively separated from the body by Shechita, still has to be, and it's not stripped of its skin like the rest of the body, still it has to be brought on the Mizbeach. And the second pasuk teaches us not only it's brought on the Mizbeach, but it is brought first. So then the question...
If it's brought first, why do you need the first pasuk? You need from the...
Because if you only had the second one, you wouldn't know it means it's brought first. You would think the second one means that you have to put it on the Mizbeach. You wouldn't know that.
Second
you
one
need one...
First.
In other words, you have two psukim that mentioned Rosh and Peder. If you only had one pasuk, regardless whether it was in pasuk Ches or pasuk Yudbeis, you would think all it teaches is you're okay. The head and the Peder have to be burnt on the Mizbeach, even though they're different than the other Eivor. You wouldn't know that it has to be first. But one of them teaches you... Right. The one teaches you that it... But then you would think that it means that just the fact that the Rosh has to be offered on the Mizbeach, which you wouldn't know otherwise.
Ah.
Yeah. So the question is, okay, so that explains why we need to say twice Rosh.
One is for the Rosh.
One to teach us that the Rosh is offered altogether, and even though it's separate from the rest of the body, and the other one that it goes first. So the question is, Peder Kama to Kosev Rahman Alamali. Okay, but why does the Pasuk have to repeat Peder twice? The Rosh, we understand why it has to repeat twice, but why is it repeating Peder twice?
The peder
is the fat. That's the fat. So the answer is miboiler v'chidatanya. We need it to teach us what it says in another braisa. Kesed hu oiseh. What do you do with this peder? You take the peder, the fat, and you drape it over the beis hashchita, the part, the cut neck of the animal, umaleu, and that's how you bring it up onto the mizbeach. V'zeu derech kovod shomayla, that is a respectful way for Hashem that you shouldn't be bringing something that's covered in blood onto the mizbeach. So that's why we need the second peder, teaches us that concept, that first of all, the one teaches us that with the head goes the peder, that the peder is used to cover it, and the other one teaches us both of them are brought on the mizbeach at the same time. The two of them together go first on the mizbeach ahead of all the avos.
If you just had one pasuk, you wouldn't think that.
Then you would think it means. Then when you think, it means that okay, it means the rosh goes on the mizbeach. You wouldn't know what you'd think. The rosh with the peder goes on the mizbeach. You wouldn't know necessarily. You wouldn't know necessarily that they go first, or that the peder is used to cover over the head the whole time.
And Tosfos points out
also the fact that it says twice rosh. One of them teaches us therefore this concept that we're trying to learn over here, that shchita is min hasaver, and the other one teaches us therefore that the head goes first. So that's a fourth way. So anyway, that's a fourth way of learning that shchita is min hasaver, because the fact that you have that we're saying that the head was already removed from the body, and removed meaning that the two simonim were cut. Okay, fine. Now a fourth one. Actually, we had four so far. We had Rav Kahana, we had Rav Yemer, we had Tana Dvei Rav Shmuel, and then we had this Braisa from Sifra. Now a fifth one. V'hai Tana Maisel Omeocha. Then we have another Tana that learns that shchita takes place at the neck from yet another way. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa. Now you have a Tosfos that says, Zois Torah Habehema V'Hoyz. This is the Torah, this is the rule, we had the Tosfos before, yeah. This is the rule that applies to the Behema and to the bird. So the question is, what do you mean they're not similar? The Torah shrubs the Behema, la'oif for the Behema. In what way are they similar? The fact is, you have a lot of differences between them. Behema matama mago rasa, a dead behema that was not shechted properly, is matama a person if he touches it or he carries it, or if ain't matama mago rasa, a dead bird is not. It's not matama. Yeah, it's not matama a person if he touches or carries it. On the other hand, ois matama begotim abeis avliya. On the other hand, a kezias of a dead bird will be matama a person and his clothes when he swallows it, even if he's not touching, even if he himself is not touching it. For example, somebody stuck it on a stick down his throat, he still becomes tummy. A behema ain't matama begotim abeis avliya. A behema does not make a person tummy in that way, because a behema is only if a person touches it with the outside of his body, touching it with the inside. That's the question. Touching, by the way, let me just explain. Touching with the inside of the throat is not considered touching. That's called maga beis astorim. Usually maga beis astorim, if a person touches something that's tummy with something in the inside of their body, that doesn't make them tummy. The tumma of oif, of nivlas oif tara, is one of the exceptions to that rule. But for example, if a person were to take, same thing, a person were to take a kezias of a nevela of a behema and stick it down somebody else's throat, that person doesn't become tummy, because he didn't touch it, he didn't touch it with the outside of his body, he didn't carry it with the outside of his body, therefore he won't be tummy. But if it was a bird, he would. But all is right. So we see that a bird and an animal are very different. Also, behema ain't a matamah begotim abeis.
That's the derivative.
This is all the derivative we're talking about. So be'ezer Torah shobs the behema la'oif la'oif la'behema. So in what Torah, in what rules are an oif and a behema similar? Like this, lo malacha teaches you, ma behema b'shchita, just like an animal has to be shechted, and we know that because the pasuk explicitly says, b'shochat es ben abokar, the same thing we learned from that a bird requires shchita, which we're going to discuss later on the Amud, which we won't get to tonight. We'll get to Tuesday night, Bez Hashem, but we're going to have the whole discussion about whether birds require shchita in our Torah. So this braisa follows the opinion that they do, and we learn that from the Zohar Torah. Right? Yeah. So once we learn that a behemoth requires shchita, so does an oif. We could continue imalahalan beroish shnayim afkan beroish shnayim. Then you could argue maybe just like an animal requires you have to cut through most of the bones on him, and we know that from the previous braisa about the head being removed from the body by an ola, where again removed meant that both simonim were cut through, because if only one simon was cut through, you couldn't call it that was removed in any reasonable sense. So therefore, obviously, hutas, that the head was removed, meaning that both simonim were cut through. So if by an animal you require that, maybe also an oif requires most of both. No, tamad lema zois. That is why you have the word zois, which is a mute. It only applies to animals, not to birds. Okay.
No, but it says zois teres abema
zois. Fine. So we're going to discuss that. Wait. The point is that we have a mute zois. Okay. Rabbi Yezer says, let's learn a little bit. Eh? Again, the question is, the Eza Torah shoves the behemoth or oif for oif for behemoth. In what sense is a behemoth similar to an oif? We just said before, as far as Tumah V'Tahara, they're very different. like this. Noi Malacha teaches you, Ma Oif Hashere Min HaSavar, just like a bird, how do you make it kosher for a korban? Is by cutting its neck, because Melita, and we know Melita takes place at the neck, because the Pasuk explicitly says, Mimul Orvoi, which means the back of the neck. Behema Hashere Min HaSavar. So here's what we're saying. This is why Rebbe Eliezer, rather, has another way of learning how we know that Shchita takes place at the neck. Because he's learning the Hekesh the other way around. Not from Behema to Oif, but rather from Oif to Behema. Just like an oif, you cut the neck to make it kosher for a korban. So also an animal is minas taver. Now hold on. E malahalim mimul oref, afkan mimul oref. So you could argue in that case maybe the similarity should carry through. A bird you do from the back of the neck because you do melitra. Maybe an animal also. No, we know it wouldn't be melitra because by an animal the Torah uses the word b'shocha. So it means it's a different process. So it wouldn't mean with a fingernail pressing, fine, but how do we know maybe it means in the back of the neck, just like Malika? Right. Therefore it says you should do Malika of its head on the back of its neck. Veloyavil and not separate the head from the body, meaning Roish Shoy, its head is a mirror. Roish Shoy Zemimol Orif, only the head of a bird is cut off from the body, Mimol Orfoy, from the back of the neck. But any other creature that's being shechted, namely an animal, is not from mul oref, is not from the back of the neck. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer is learning that way. That therefore we see that shechita takes place at the neck, but not the back of the neck, because it says roish shoy. Or malakas roish shoy mi mul oref lo yavil. Roish shoy, its head, only the head of a bird is done mi mul oref, not any other creature.
Right.
Okay. So the question is, Rabbi Eliezer, I zois my ovelay. Okay, the Tanakhama of this bride that had used the word zois to say that only an animal needs two simonim, a bird only needs one sim. So it says zois teres a behemah va'oif, and the behemah is next to the word zois. But the question is, where is Rabbi Eliezer learning that? So what is Rabbi Eliezer using? What is Rabbi Eliezer doing with the word zois? The answer is he loves zois. Rabbi Eliezer would say the other way around. If it weren't for the word zois, habamini, you would think like this. Ma ois besimenechad, just like a bird, a proper melitza can be done, at least when it comes to a chata, by cutting only one simen. And we know that because the Torah said, v'lo yavil. Ah, behema besimenechad, maybe a behema also can be shechted with only one simen. Kos rachmana zois, therefore the Torah says zois. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, it comes out that Zois, the miut of Zois, is kind of the opposite of what the Tanakhama did. If the Tanakhama said that it's a given that a behema needs two, and therefore the Zois teaches us, but an oif doesn't. Rabbi Eliezer says the other way around. It's a given that an oif needs only one, at least in the case of a chatas oif. The Zois teaches us that because we say it's a chatas oif, a lo yavil, you don't divide it, meaning you only cut one simen. So how do we know that does not apply to an animal because Zois? Okay. Okay, so those are all the various ways of learning that shechita takes place at the neck. We have Rav Kahana from the Shachat, Rav Yema is from Zavachta, Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel also from the Shachat, the Braisa from Teres Koyanim from the fact that we mentioned that the head is separated from the body, and that was the one from Teres Koyanim that we implied that at some point in the processing of the animal for a korban, the head is effectively separated from the body, which means by cutting through both simonim. And then finally, we had Rabbi Eliezer, who's learning that we learn it from Zois Teres Abahema Va'oit, that just like a bird is melika is done from the neck, so also an animal the shchita is done from the neck, but not from the back of the neck because Yoshei, and there's a difference between two simonim and one simon because of Zois. So then the next thing Gemara is going to deal with is more ways that we learn this difference that an oif needs only one simon and behemoths need two simonin, and that'll also get into a discussion of why it is that fish don't require shchita at all. So we'll get to that.
We
still have to figure out how we know that fish aren't included as well. We'll also talk about the deeper reason why fish aren't included. We'll get to it, but okay, tomorrow night being Nitzelnach, no shear. So we'll resume Tuesday night.